Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're asking the question, what should we wear to church?
I bet you never thought we'd ask that question on this podcast.
I thought we were done asking that. We can wear whatever we want.
Wear whatever you want. There's a lot to think about here. I recently read a fascinating article, and that's what triggered my suggestion that we talk about this. And so before I get to the article, let me summarize, I think, how we've thought about dress for church. So like when I was a kid growing up, there was church clothes. Like my mom would not let me wear jeans to church. Mm-hmm. You couldn't wear a t-shirt to church. It was sort of like there was a certain set of clothes that as a young boy, I was like, why do I got to wear these? You know, it's like it was annoying to have to wear slacks and a shirt with buttons.
Tuck it in.
Tuck the shirt in. And there was like some penny loaf for like a nice pair of shoes that weren't very comfortable. But that was what you wore to church. And my parents were fairly strict about that. I remember having arguments with my mom on Sunday morning of like, why do I got to wear this? Can I wear this? And she would have to like call my dad and be like, hey, could you speak to this child?
Bob won't
get sure he loved that.
That didn't happen all the time, but it happened at least a couple times. Since my dad was prepping his sermon early Sunday morning,
I'm sure he
enjoyed that. And then more recently, I think what's happened is like since I've grown up, there's been this shift where it's almost like, man, saying you should dress a certain way for church is sort of a vestige of a religiosity and a formality that has nothing to do with the gospel. And so, especially in our attempts to try to engage the culture and welcome people into the church and not say you have to wear a certain uniform to sort of be welcome here, we've sort of swung the pendulum really far the other way to say, hey, sort of wear what you want. And the funny story here is my neighbors across the street who are a little more traditional in their sort of church attendance. When we first moved there, got to know them, we invited them to Coram Deo. And this was way back in the early years when we were downtown. And there was probably 80 or 90 people in our church at that time. And I remember I was wearing flip-flops because I was like, I was going hardcore the other direction. So it was like I was wearing shorts and flip-flops and I don't know. And they showed up to our church on a Sunday. And they ever since then, like to this day, they call Coram Deo First Church of the Flip-Flop because they're just like, it was so out of the ordinary for them. They're like, why is a pastor wearing flip-flops? Like that is a whole nother category. So they like tease me about that to this day. It was 10 years ago that happened. So
they were like, we'd consider coming to your church.
Yeah, if you didn't
but
wear,
you were wearing flip-flops.
I couldn't see your toes.
So now we can't respect you at all.
Shout out to my friend Kevin Colley who says preaching in sandals is evil. Anyways, in my own experience, here's what I've seen is like I grew up with a certain sort of standard of dress for church, and then the pendulum swung to the other side of sort of like there is no standard. So fascinatingly, in a recent issue of First Things, in the June-July 2017 issue of First Things, there is an article by Bruce Boyer, who is a former fashion editor for GQ and Esquire. All right, this guy is like an authority on men's style. In fact, he recently wrote a book in 2015 titled True Style. And this guy is like a world-renowned authority on men's dress. And so, by the way, as we talk about this topic, it's going to lean a little bit in the men's wardrobe category just because that's what the article is about. He's writing particularly about the men's dress wardrobe. And here's what fascinated me is Boyer steps back and sort of chronicles the social history of various types of dress. And I had never thought about that before. And so what he does is he takes our experience of sort of like how we should dress and how we think about how we should dress, and he puts it in a cultural and social framework. And he says, here's sort of the evolution of men's dress. And then he's trying to tease out what have we lost in the changing ways that we've thought about style. And by the way, if it's worth saying here, I think there's a difference between style and fashion. I think fashion is sort of faddish. Fashion is sort of like what's the cool thing this year that's going to be obsolete next year. I think style is a more timeless category. So when we talk about style, in fact, even the title of Bruce Boyer's book, True Style, I think he's getting at there is a certain style of dressing that is timeless. Fashion tends to go in and out and change and ebb and flow. But style is a little more permanent, a little more lasting. So what I want to do in this podcast is we want to tease out some of Bruce Boyer's observations about men's style and about men's dress and ask the question, what should we wear to church? And we're not going to answer that question, by the way. I don't want to answer that question as much as I just want to provoke thought about that question, because that's what this article did for me. It made me think, yeah, what should I wear to church in light of what church is? And how is my thinking about that maybe really shallow? Mm-hmm. Because I think growing out of my childhood, I was sort of like, sweet, yeah, I don't have to wear khakis to church anymore. And so I sort of went in this direction of, reject all sort of propriety when it came to what I should wear to mm-hmm. church. And Bruce Boer has made me think the opposite way. He's made me ask the question again, is there something deeper and more meaningful about wearing certain clothes to church? And not just church, but he's going to make the case other occasions as well. So let me just sort of quickly summarize the article, guys, and then I'll ask you to sort of interact with it. This is about a 4 or 5 page article. It's not very long. But Boer essentially says there's been two major shifts in men's wardrobes, or actually maybe 3 or 4 major shifts. But the first, he says, if you think about like colonial times when men wore like white wigs and robes, right? Like think about the founding fathers of America and how no men dresses that way anymore. And in fact, we think that's kind of weird. Like, why would you wear a white wig? You know, that's just odd. But he says that's all a holdover from sort of the old British class system, where it was like, that's what a successful man looked like, all right? And so in the early 1800s, there was what he calls the great masculine renunciation, where men renounced sort of this wigs and this formal attire and went with a more modest and sober suit and shirt. So sort of the Victorian worsted suit and cotton shirt, that sort of became formal men's attire. And it was a way of sort of taking these class distinctions out of wardrobe and just saying, let's go sober. Let's go just sort of everyday, common, something that everyone can have access to and that doesn't communicate, oh, if you wear a wig, you're sort of some nobleman in society, right? This is America. This is democracy. We want to shift in a direction that sort of says, here's what a man wears. And that held sway for about 100 years, from the middle of the 1800s until the middle of the 1900s. He says a couple things happened. First of all, after World War II, then you had this sort of what he calls the Ivy look, which actually came out of the GI Bill and all these soldiers coming back and going to college. And there was sort of this, you know, the Ivy look is sort of your loafers, your button down gray or blue shirts. It's a little more your casual sort of college Ivy League sort of look, right?
Preppy kids,
yeah, that sort of thing. And then you had Woodstock and sort of the hippie revolution of the late 60s, which sort of threw all that out and replaced it with tie-dyes and baggy pants and like sort of this way outside the mainstream sort of way of dressing. And then he says, in the past really 2 decades, there's been what he calls the great casualization. Here's what he says. The suits and white dress shirts and discreet ties that most businessmen wore for 100 years and more started to disappear after the 1970s. When this casual business trend began in earnest the following decade, fashion writers started referring to it as the third wardrobe, an alternative to both the tailored business clothes and athletic-inspired clothing that had traditionally comprised a man's wardrobe for much of the 20th century. So he says you had tailored wardrobe, that was your business suits, and then you had your athletic wardrobe. And he said then you had this sort of casual Fridays was like this third thing of like, you know, something in between those two. Here's a fascinating social observation. The workwear of what used to be known as blue collar workers, clothes that included blue chambray and denim work shirts and trousers, civilian uniforms of various types, postal workers, garage mechanics, etc., farm and range clothing, and active field and stream outdoor sports clothing makes up the bulk of men's wardrobes today. The fashion garment of the moment, for example, is the olive green military field jacket issued to soldiers during the Vietnam conflict. The humblest of blue cotton work shirts itself, which used to be the staple of the steel worker and ranch hands wardrobe and sold for $3 to $5 40 years ago, is now found to be the mainstay of international designer collections, selling for anywhere from $100 to $500. which is a fascinating observation. Like, you think about what hipsters wear. They wear
that's dressing up right there.
Garage mechanic shirts, postal worker shirts, blue chambray work shirt. Like, all these things that sort of used to identify you as a worker. Like, this is a working class. This is what a man wears when he goes to work at the garage. This is now sort of like what people pay good money for. And what he's saying is, this is odd because it's taken what used to be a very everyday thing and sort of made it this elite thing that you show that you have lots of money to buy by how distinct your denim work shirt is and where you bought it. And he's just sort of teasing out how odd this is in fashion and style history. But here's what he observes in all of this. And this is where I want to sort of draw some observations and maybe some conclusions. Underlying this casual revolution is not the triumph of one class. So he would say, is this mean that, like, we're finally getting rid of class mm-hmm. distinctions and we don't have to wear suits to work anymore and there's now just sort of no class has won? He says, nope, it's not that. But rather, the loss among all classes of a sense of occasion. By occasion, I mean an event out of the ordinary, a function other than our daily lives, an experience for which we take special care and preparation, at which we act and speak and comport ourselves differently. There used to be many of these events, social rituals that filled our non-working lives, weddings and funerals, going to church, restaurants, parties, and theaters, meeting important people of various stripes, people who had greater social standing than we did, was an occasion for our parents and grandparents to dress up. And that included going to the doctor's office when you were sick because the doctor was thought to be an important person worthy of that outward sign of respect. Mm. Respect for the event and those in attendance was what made the occasion special. It can now be said that this sort of an outward sign, or almost any of the older outward signs of ritual, are considered pure snobbery. Mm. But if these outward signs are socially discouraged today, then what makes an occasion special? And how do we know? Can an event be an occasion if there's no attempt to outwardly manifest it? Ritualized behavior of one sort or another may be considered an outward side of our inward disposition, but how complete can this be if it is not expressed in our appearance? Is it possible to believe that when we now wear polo shirts, khakis, and hyper-designed athletic shoes to weddings, funerals, and graduations, it's a sign that we have forgotten how to enjoy the events by which we measure life? More than a few men have told me they no longer understand what's appropriate for any occasion anymore. So what's fascinating to me about his observation is he's saying, occasion is the defining category here. There used to be this sense of, this is an occasion, and for an occasion, you dress up. And that because we've lost this sense of occasion, or we don't even know what constitutes an occasion anymore, we're missing the ability to sort of like enjoy such an occasion and mark it as special. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me, think about, like, you know, anything that you really counts as an occasion in your life, like for your wedding, you rented a tux or you wore a suit, mm-hmm. you know, or and anything that sort of stands apart, it generally is that we dress a certain way, not because it's more comfortable to do so, but because it's sort of a way of setting this apart as special. Mm.
Bob, listening to you read this article, it reminded me of a conversation I had with a friend. We were at a baseball game, and I've seen Ken Burns' documentary on baseball, and it shows all these old pictures of people dressed up, dresses, suits, hats at this baseball game in the middle of summer. I'm like, that looks horrible.
Yeah.
But
that looks horrible.
That was an event.
Hot July
like
day.
They dressed yeah. up and they went to this event, this baseball game. Now baseball stadiums have swimming pools.
Yeah.
You go to the baseball game in your swimsuit.
Yeah.
It's like
Disneyland.
Yeah, it's like what are we doing? Like we feel like we're going backwards here. We're losing our clothes.
Well, and what he's saying is because we've sort of renounced the idea that dress means anything, we're left with this sense of like, well, how do I show that something matters, you know? And it is sort of a step backward. And I think what he's trying to provoke is, he says, frustrated by the demands of individual expression,
yeah,
some have begun to yearn again for a shared and public happiness. Behind their desire lies a realization that was once universal. a society hospitable to the down and out will not be afraid to dress up. So what he's suggesting is like...
That's a challenge.
Yeah, actually what... Like the beauty of... There's a suit that you wear. I remember... Do you remember the movie Hoosiers?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's an old sports movie. Some of you might not have seen it.
That's a while ago.
There's this drunk guy that like Gene Hackman's character is trying to like, get out of his drunken alcoholic stupor and get him like to do something respectable. And so he invites him to be the assistant coach of the basketball team. And he says, he asks him, do you have a suit? Mm. And he goes, I got one right there. I was married in it. And he's like, all right, well, you got to wear that to basketball when you show up to the game. And what he's trying to do is to say, you could show up sloppy drunk wearing what you're wearing now, but if I make you put that suit on, it at least forces you to see this as a different, like this is an occasion that now requires something of you. And so there's that sense, like it's tapping into this sense that when we put on certain clothes, we do, there's even a sort of expectation of behavior and demeanor that comes with that seems to go along with it.
That's carried over too, because NBA coaches are still wearing suits. They're like the few people in professional sports still rocking suits. If you wear a polo as a head coach, you're like a rebel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Mike, to your point, I sent you guys this photo that I found fascinating. So we're looking at this photo that's on a computer screen right now of my great-grandfather. My great-grandfather emigrated here from Norway in the early 1900s. I don't have a date on this picture. It's sitting in my grandfather's house on his dresser. I'm guessing the date is probably 1910, 1911. It's before World War I. These men, it's a picture of my grandfather and five other men and a young boy. These are guys who are working, laying what is now the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad across the state of South Dakota. Okay, back then it was the Chicago Midwestern line. But these guys are laying track, all right? So they're hardworking out in the middle of the prairie. That's how my grandfather made his living, was just working for the railroad, laying track across South Dakota. So it's these six grown men and then a boy who looks like he's about 9 or 10 are all on one of those old hand carts that they used to use on Bugs Bunny, where they like they pump themselves up and down and go.
This just looks
along
like
the
a lot of work.
Track. Yeah, it's like but here's the thing, that to make the point, the same point you made about the baseball games, Mike. In this photo, every one of these guys is wearing a 3-piece wool suit. Most of them are wearing ties. All of them are wearing hats, and they're all. I mean, it looks like they like guys would not dress like this today. If they were going to the nicest wedding, like these guys are just dressed to the hilt, and they're literally out in the middle of the prairie. They're not at a wedding. They're not at a funeral.
They're not going to run into anybody.
This is like, hey, we're going to take a photo of ourselves. And so we're putting on our good clothes. You know, this is an occasion.
And what's interesting about that too, is like, they didn't dress up for the photo.
Right.
They wore this every day. Somebody happened to have a camera.
You mean they didn't get the heads up like, hey, it's staff photo day, so come in your best
and,
suit.
And, you know, just hat tip to your gramps. He's the one in the photo wearing a pocket watch.
Yeah, he's got the pocket watch.
So, I mean, he's
pretty sweet.
He's probably running the thing.
It's looking good.
He's got the pocket watch.
So here's the point that makes to me is, there was a day when it didn't matter that you were working outside in the heat. That didn't change how you dressed. If you're a man who is self-respecting, you're going to dress a certain way. And now we've sort of lost that. And it does seem that the sense of occasion is interesting to me. And so, go ahead, Dusty.
Well, it's just interesting that now, you know, like we as pastors officiate weddings, and now it seems like you have to really, to have a nice wedding, air quotes, you have to, it's about the venue. Like you almost have to spend a lot of money on your venue so that you send the signal to your invitation list of, hey, we're going to do it at this particular venue. So that means you should class it up a little bit.
Yeah.
To your point earlier. So actually, Jason and I always have that conversation of like, oh, this is at the Holland Performing Arts Center. This isn't at Bob's backyard.
Right,
you know, like this is different. So it's almost like to your point, the occasion has lost its luster. So now it's about venue. And I can maybe send a signal that my wedding's important. And maybe you'll dress up if I have it at a ritzier place.
Bob, you've read and probably understand Charles Taylor more than I do, but
that's a great assumption.
how is what we think about occasion? I'm thinking of like weddings and going to church and things like that. How is that connected with our disenchantment with what we see as sacred and meaningful and significant?
Yeah, I'm not sure all the nuances to that question, but I think you could say at least two things. One, people used to have a sense of God's presence more than they do. And so even dressing up to go to church is sort of like, we're going to honor the Lord, right? And I think that language even sort of
is not as common anymore. Mm. It's sort of like we've flattened the world to where even church is not, oh, God's present here, we're going to honor him, but just, well, God's present everywhere. Everyday worship, so yeah, therefore, yeah, yeah, just wear what you would wear every day.
Yeah.
And so that's one observation there that might be germane. The other one that Boyer points out in this article is that there used to be a public persona and a private persona. Mm. Like he said, and I think we usually see that as bad, especially when we think about gospel. We're like, I don't want a false me and a real me. You know, but he said, he doesn't seem to be using it in that way. He seems to be saying, there was a sort of public decorum that was expected of people that, like, if you put on a suit and you're going to an occasion, you're conducting yourself in a certain way. And whether that's how you really are or not, you're expected to sort of act that way. And he says, what we have now is sort of the triumph of the private persona, where it's like any sort of acting with a certain propriety is sort of seen as false, as like you're not, quote unquote, authentic. And so I think that plays in here too. And in my mind, that might relate to some of the stuff that Charles Taylor talks about disenchantment, because if all there is, it's good to be a genuine person. It's good to always be the same in any setting. But there is also this sense of a public persona. When I'm going to a special occasion, right? This is why we raise our kids. Like, hey, you can run around and be a hoodlum in the backyard, but when we go to a funeral, you better not do that. You're going to get disciplined, because we're trying to preserve in them a sense of, like, there is, in certain public spaces and certain events and certain solemn occasions, there is a way that you conduct yourself that is different. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be something that we're more and more losing, not just in how we dress, but even in how we teach behavior and how we conduct ourselves.
I'm really stuck on the fact that we're only 2 decades removed from this whole thing, or actually into this whole thing. So I'm thinking about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, Woodstock. He references Woodstock in this article.
2 decades?
Yeah.
20 years?
Okay. Maybe more. Feels like
maybe five.
Feels like
maybe it's 50 years.
I guess what I'm saying
is, Dusty wasn't at Woodstock.
Yeah, I wasn't there. It just seems like yesterday. Yeah. I think what I'm saying is, like, even other stuff we've talked about on this podcast, like around some of the sexual topics that we've had around all of that sexual revolution stuff, it seems like really what we're talking about here is just like how we've just subtly embraced rebellion.
Yeah.
And how even like our parents and grandparents would still feel like church is a place that you should dress up for.
Yeah.
And so they're like figuring out how to dress down for church now. And I'm wondering, like, well, actually they're just embracing our rebellion because they just see the culture going that way. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, it's sobering to me that it's only a few years ago, it seems like, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. So going back to the original question, what should we wear to church, that I told you, we're not going to answer that for you. But what I at least hope this does is to provoke some questions of, what kind of an occasion is the public worship of God? How can we meaningfully mark that occasion as different and distinct? And how can we, in appropriate ways, show honor in that occasion? As I read this article and tried to, like, critique my own thoughts about it, I thought, well, one good thing about sort of the casualization of church is it seems like there's not a requirement that you have to dress a certain way to show up. Because I remember being in a church one time where a biker guy, Harley guy, came in leathers and a bandana and was asked to leave, like was literally escorted off the premises because he was dressed that way, which just offended me, because I was like, we're basically telling you, unless you dress a certain way, you can't come hear the gospel preach.
Right.
So not that. Yeah. We don't want to go back to that.
Yeah, preach.
But I think there is, and the interesting thing about what Boyer seems to be saying in this article is there's a sense in which dressing up is classless. In other words, it's not that only rich people can afford mm-hmm. to dress up, but it's actually mm-hmm. that poor people are better at this. Mm. In fact, if you think about, like, think about the African American church, and how African American men tend to dress to the hilt on Sundays. And I asked one of my African American friends one time, "Hey, man, why do you guys dress so fly on Sundays? You know, like, what is it about a suit and a tie and a pocket square? And, like, what is that?" And he said, "Man, Sundays was the only days we could dress ourselves. Like, under slavery, you wore whatever you were issued. And so Sundays was like, we get to mark what we actually want to dress like this day. And so there's something really deep and meaningful about the sense of occasion that's there. And what that also communicates to me is even a slave living on slave wages saw this as important enough to invest money in a certain type of clothing that has persisted down to this day, because not because he necessarily could afford it, but because it was meaningful. It was important. It showed a sense of propriety and honor. And so it is interesting to me that the things that seem to cost most now and be the most confusing to people are like, well, what kind of stylish tennis shoes should I wear with my khaki? You know, like, it's not like, can I afford a suit? Yeah, you can afford a suit even if it's down at the thrift store. Like, the suit's not actually that hard to buy. It's what's frustrating is like, how do I buy the right chambray shirt to match my, you know, my athletic tennis shoes and all that stuff. So it's like that middle wardrobe, that casual Friday wardrobe that seems to be confusing the heck out of people. But if we just went back to like, hey, what if dressing a certain way on Sundays is not a sign of class distinction nor a sign of snobbery, but just a sign of wanting to honor an occasion? Mm-hmm. Does that change then how we think about dress?
I think it's an interesting challenge to men too. You know, like you said at the very beginning of this podcast, we're going to primarily talk about men's fashion and dress because that's what the article does. I've actually been thinking while we've been recording this that women keep it classy at church.
Yeah.
You know, and if the church drifts in the way that the men do, men are pretty sloppy.
Yeah, they can be.
So like it's also a leadership thing.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of hidden messages in the dress that we have or don't have.
Well, and that's the thing. He says in the article, look, dress is symbolic. It's not meaningless. It means something. It's saying something, how we dress. And so we can say all we want, well, it doesn't really matter, but it actually does matter. We are communicating something. And so we should ask the question, like, what do we want to communicate? And how does this perspective maybe challenge our thinking about what's appropriate?
Messing with me. Suit and tie on Sunday.
Let me end with a couple more quotes from the article just to give you some food for thought. With the lack of occasion and the freedom from any but financial restraint, today the social signals clothes send seem more numerous, more capricious, more interchangeable, more fluid and permeable, more complicated and ambiguous. Conceptions are spun, realities are virtual, and clothes are mere perceptions of fantasies. We choose the clothing we wear not for modesty, nor the differentiation of the sexes, nor for protection from the elements, nor to signal our place in the social structure, but for the roles we wish to play, unencumbered by any social considerations or occasions. Later on, he summarizes this way, quoting C.S. Lewis, "Occasions are shared public realities, rituals in which we recognize something other than private expression." C.S. Lewis thought about this idea of occasion in terms of solemnity. For Lewis, solemnity is a public, joyous propriety in which we humbly give up our private selves to the ritual. The modern habit of doing ceremonial things unceremoniously is no proof of humility. Wearing one's Sunday best, as much as kneeling, was a visible sign of a humble heart. Interesting food for thought from Bruce Boyer. And you can find this article online, I think, if you just search for Dress Up. That's the title of the article in First Things.
That's going to do it for this week's conversation. The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we've talked about today might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context or dress in your own context. We invite you to join us next Wednesday for another Wednesday conversation.